is down in Mexico. 1975, I think. After the lecture, he asked for questions. Ridhananda Maharaj, seated on a cushion at Prabhupada's feet, translated the inquiries from Spanish into English for Prabhupada, and then translated Prabhupada's reply into Spanish for the audience. Ridhananda Maharaj, he asks, what if we have already committed so many offenses to chanting? At this point, how can we purify? Prabhupada, if we don't commit offense, why do you voluntarily commit offense? You should not commit offense. Then it will be all right, purified. Ridhananda Maharaj, we don't know how we can increase our desire for chanting. Interesting. These are questions we were just discussing at Maharaj's seminar. So, as early as 1975, our devotees were asking the same questions. How to avoid offenses? How to increase my taste? So the question, we don't know how to increase our desire for chanting. Prabhupada, by performing Sankirtan. Just like if a man drinks, and if he drinks and drinks, then he becomes a drunkard. The example amused the audience, and they broke into laughter. Drink more and more, and you become a drunkard, Prabhupada continued. Similarly, chant more and more, and you become a perfect chanter. Ridhananda Maharaj, what is the greatest offense? Prabhupada, yes, that is the first offense. Guru Avigya, Shruti Shastra Nindanam. Shruti Shastra Nindanam Guru Avigya. If you accept a guru and then again disobey him, then what is your position? You are not a gentleman. You promised your guru before Krishna, before fire, that I shall obey your order, I shall execute this. If again you do not do this, then you are not even a gentleman. What to speak of a devotee? This is common sense. A man asked in Spanish, excuse me, sir, before in your previous life as a karmi, what were you doing? Well, it's one of those questions that's like outrageous, but we're glad somebody asked it because it actually makes for a very unique exchange. Just shouldn't be us that asks the question. Ridhananda Maharaj didn't translate the question to Srila Prabhupada, but immediately asserted strongly, the pure devotee has never been a karmi. He is never a karmi. A pure devotee is always a transcendental person right from his birth. He just came from the spiritual world to save us, to teach us this transcendental knowledge given out thousands and thousands of years ago by Lord Krishna. Ridhananda Maharaj continued glorifying Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked Ridhananda Maharaj, what did he say? But he didn't want to say anything to Srila Prabhupada. He said, oh, nothing, Srila Prabhupada, nothing. He would speak strongly to the man asking this question. And when Srila Prabhupada would question him, Ridhananda Maharaj would be like a little child. Oh, Srila Prabhupada, it doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. He's just talking some nonsense. Then finally, Srila Prabhupada just laughed and took the next question. No answer. Ridhananda Maharaj, he asks, how can we control the tongue? Prabhupada said, Prasadam. You take prasadam. Prabhupada smiled, and his answer was so pleasurable for everyone that they all began to laugh. Prabhupada continued, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said like that, out of all the senses, the tongue sense is very powerful. So it is very difficult to control it. Therefore, Krishna has given us one weapon. What is that? Krishna is very kind. Therefore, he has given us his remnants of food. So if we make this promise that I shall not take anything which is not offered to Krishna, then your tongue will be controlled. The tongue's business is twofold. One is the tongue will speak and vibrate sound, and another business is to taste nice food. So if you engage the tongue in the matter of Krishna's service by vibrating Hare Krishna mantra, and if you don't allow your tongue to touch anything which is not offered to Krishna, then you become immediately Krishna realized. When the tongue is controlled, all of the senses are automatically controlled. This is the process. Now again, engage your tongue chanting Hare Krishna. On his cue, the devotees began a kirtan. Srila Prabhupada had given them everything. Kirtan, prasadam, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's service. And now, at least for a precious week, Prabhupada was giving them himself. Every morning and night he was chanting with them and being with them, strengthening their faith in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada liked his quarters in the temple. The devotees had divided one big room with a curtain, one side for preaching and one side for resting, and had painted it pastel blue after the color scheme Srila Prabhupada had requested for his room in Los Angeles. And in their own way, the devotees had tried to make it artistic and Vedic. They had decorated a beautiful asan for him to sit on while meeting with guests. Beside his sitting place was a display of his books, and above the bookcase, a silver vase of flowers. Prabhupada continued to work persistently at his Bhagavatam translations and purports. During his last visit to Mexico in 1972, he had been working on the fourth canto. Now he was on the fifth. That he could concentrate on translating while traveling almost constantly was a remarkable achievement. Perhaps only a writer can appreciate how extremely difficult it is to expect to make serious literary composition while at the same time moving continually from room to room, country to country, climate to climate, one week after the next. But Prabhupada had been doing it for years, and he was able to do it because he was completely surrendered to the task and because Krishna was directly collaborating with him. Devotees had come to expect that Srila Prabhupada would live a very busy life all day, dealing with internal management, with devotees, guests, letters, lectures, travels, and then at night, instead of collapsing for 8 hours of hard-earned rest, that he would lie down for a couple of hours and then rise, unaided, when almost everyone else was asleep, and execute the most demanding task of his entire day, translating and commenting on the Sanskrit verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. That his Bhagavatams were so masterfully rendered could only mean that his work was, as a prominent American professor had described it, God sent. Many professors, librarians and scholars were appreciating Srila Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada wrote the devotees in America who were circulating his books in universities and getting reviews. Quote, "Thank you very much for sending the book reviews. Send more if you can. These are very, very encouraging. I am keeping collection of these reviews and I show them to big, big scholars and professors when they come to see me. They are very impressed." But how at the age of 78 could he write such transcendental literature which was praised and worshipped by all devotees and appreciated by religious and Sanskrit professors and at the same time travel and tend to several thousand initiated disciples? One can only begin to understand and appreciate his endeavor. Quote from Nanda Prana. Prabhupada was very busy with the translation. Some of us devotees took care of Prabhupada and would stay outside his room all night. We could hear the dictating machine. At 10 o'clock, Prabhupada would stop the dictating machine and turn the lights off. Then, about 2 o'clock, he would rise without an alarm clock and turn the light on. He would keep doing his translations. Another devotee. I could see every night Srila Prabhupada very regularly just turned off his light. I couldn't see inside his room, but from a little space underneath the door, I could see he was working until late at night. Every devotee would take rest, but he was working until 10 o'clock. At exactly 10 o'clock, he would turn off his light. Then, automatically, very regularly, he would turn on the light at 1:30 in the morning. I was very surprised how he could just rest for 3.5 hours and work all day long. I think during the daytime he would take another nap, but from 1:30 a.m. until the morning I could see the lights on. Then in the morning, after Mangal Arati, he would go on his morning walk. In Chapultepec Park, Srila Prabhupada liked to walk on the narrow road of the philosophers. The early mornings were cold and he wore his long saffron coat with hood. The simple canvas shoes he wore would become wet from the dew on the grass. His rapid pace made his younger disciples hustle to keep up. Often Srila Prabhupada's words would go untranslated, and the Mexican boys would catch only a phrase or two. But they were happy to be with their spiritual master. He was interested in the many varieties of trees and sometimes asked about them. Once stopping before a large dead tree, he examined it carefully. "What is the difference between this dead tree and the others?" he asked. One disciple replied, "This tree is dead because its time is over." "No," Prabhupada said, and tapped his cane on the ground. Another devotee ventured, "This tree has a certain karma, different from the others?" "No," Prabhupada again tapped his cane on the ground. "The difference is that..." Exactly. "The difference is that there is not a soul in this tree." While walking among the trees in Chapultepec Park, Prabhupada spotted a certain eucalyptus twig above his head. He stopped. From as early as 1967 in San Francisco, he had used the twigs of eucalyptus trees as toothbrushes, a Western substitute for the antiseptic neem twigs of India. Quote from Shiti Mohan. Prabhupada pointed to the tree and told Hridayananda Maharaj, "I want that stick." It was a very small one. Hridayananda Maharaj heard Prabhupada. He said, "Prabhupada wants that. Come on, bring it down, bring it down." He wanted to give it to Prabhupada. So he made a pyramid of men, with three men on the bottom, then two men on top of them, and one skinny devotee climbed on top. When the devotees stood and reached up, it was still about 50 centimeters too short. But when he made an effort to reach it, the whole pyramid... Jai Shri Radha Gopinath ki, Jai Jagannath Baladev Subhadra ki, Jai Shri Gonitai ki. When the devotee made the effort to reach it, what happened? Huh? The whole thing fell. The pyramid fell to the ground. Prabhupada was watching them, smiling and laughing. Again, they made the pyramid bigger. And the devotee tried to reach it again, but again, they fell down. Then more devotees tried. They became wet because of the grass. And Hridayananda Maharaj was very excited, saying, "Come on, Prabhupada wants that. Prabhupada wants that. Keep moving." Prabhupada was smiling at the fun, sometimes watching the twig and sometimes watching the devotees. A third time they tried the pyramid and it fell down. But the fourth time it worked and the devotee stood up and broke the twig from the tree. He gave it to Hridayananda Maharaj, who gave it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada held it in his hand, inspected it for a minute and threw it away. There's no mention of what the devotees thought. it's like, Jai Prabhupada. Anyway. Often during his morning walk, Srila Prabhupada would only chant Hare Krishna, the universal language in which all the Spanish and English speaking devotees could participate without difficulty. For many of the Mexican disciples, this was their first personal contact with Srila Prabhupada, and they were awed. Occasionally on a walk, Srila Prabhupada would suddenly sit on a bench, and as many as 15 disciples would quickly gather at his feet, looking up at him. Quote, Muni Priya. Prabhupada sat down in the park. The people around Prabhupada also sat and came to see Prabhupada. People were sitting and looking to Prabhupada, and he was also looking at all the devotees. And all the devotees were waiting to hear from Prabhupada. Nobody makes a sound. Prabhupada looked at all the devotees and then said, "Chant Hare Krishna." Then all the devotees came to love him. Because all the people were waiting for Srila Prabhupada to talk about philosophy. These boys don't expect Srila Prabhupada to suddenly say, "Chant Hare Krishna." And they came to love him because Prabhupada said this in the middle of a silence. When Prabhupada saw the joggers, he remarked, If they say they don't care about the ultimate meaning of life, why are they running? They are running, he said, because... What could help? It's connected to the problem. If they say they don't care about the ultimate meaning of life, why are they running? They are running because they are all... Definitely true. They are all afraid of death. They passed a martial arts class. Two rows of men in black leotards gesturing aggressively in unison. Who are they fighting? He asked. He said that when he explains philosophically that everyone is afraid of death, people reply, "No, I'm not afraid." But if they're not afraid of death, then why are they doing all these? And he gestured towards the mock fighting and laughed. One morning he stopped at a large garbage container and asked about the sign on it. Ridhananda Maharaj replied, "It says, put the garbage in this place." Srila Prabhupada replied, "Then the whole material world should be in there." "But it is too big to put in this container." Another morning, riding back to the temple in the car, Prabhupada asked the driver, Nandapurana, to go faster. Ridhananda Maharaj translated Prabhupada's order to the driver, who sped up slightly. Srila Prabhupada then astonished them by saying, "Ki pasa, Nandapurana." When the ride was over, Prabhupada added, "Mucho gracias." Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.